Welcome, everyone. This is the Human to Human podcast. I'm Tennyson Wolfe, and I have created this podcast so that I can be in conversation with a few friends who I love to be in learning with, and I love to be in connection with, and I love to be in some wonder with. When I think of this podcast, it is meant to be a little bit of the longer form, not sound bites that last 3 minutes and then we're done. Although that has its place too. I really appreciate and love the slower paced or deeper dive that we get to have with some interesting humans. It's called Human to Human because I just value that particular way of naming relationships. So I think of this podcast as interesting conversations, interesting people, real time, unscripted. Gosh, let's be in good learning together. And I often invite a guest, and today there's a guest that's come in, Miss LaTanya Wilson, who I'm going to say a few things about, first of all, and then welcome you, LaTanya, with your voice. We go back a bit into our fire and water days and a bit of the Shriver days. There's just a deep ton of respect and friendship that I feel actually with you. It makes me excited to feel that we get a little time to be in this kind of connecting and exploring today. Welcome you.
Thank you. We go back to Legal Aid of Western Ohio as well.
Legal Aid of Western Ohio, even further. That's right. There are more chapters in this book.
Right.
LaTanya, how are you going today?
I'm doing good today. Yeah. I'm transitioning to school starting for my kids, and lots of good things happen.
How old are your kids? Can you share?
I have a 17-year-old who will be starting his senior year.
Oh, gosh. There we go.
Yeah, it's kind of scary there. Yeah. And then I have a 12-year-old who's starting her seventh grade year.
I still remember Septembers in that way. For us, it was always post-Labor Day back in the day when I was in school. And a little bit, I guess, with my kids who have now sort of grown out of that. But yeah, I remember the feeling of September and starting up with school again.
Yeah. It means that there's more on my plate.
Yes, there is. And you already have a good full plate.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I already have a good full plate. And so it's just more to do, more management of schedules. And then still like investigating what should they be involved in. I haven't lived here very long. I moved to Orland Park, which is a southwestern suburb of Chicago, about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And so we're still building our community.
You are.
Figuring out what we're doing.
LaTanya, can you share a little bit about what's on your full plate and how is it to have that full plate that you have these days? What's the kind of learning that seems to be calling out to you?
So my full plate includes my job, which I am the VP of Advocacy at the Shriver Center on Poverty Law. That is a policy organization where we change rules to change lives. And that is my main plate. I also am supporting Juanita in the fire and water journey, the fourth cohort. I was in school last spring, but I don't know if I'll have that time to do that this season because my plate is so full. And then I'm active in my church here. Valley Kingdom Ministries International, which is a new church for me.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some of the paths that I would like to follow with you. And some of it is just stuff that I've been drawn to because of being in connection and association and colleagueship and friendship with you. And some might just be things that arise here today. Can you say a little bit more about your job, changing the rules that change lives? That's good clarity.
Yeah, it's a policy organization where we advocate for people living in poverty. We work on removing barriers that keep people mired in poverty. And with a racial justice lens focus, we find that our systems were put into place by with race in mind. So in order to dismantle those systems and improve those systems functions and impact on people of color, that we must keep race in mind as we work to change those systems.
Latanya, how did you become a person that cared so deeply about such things? And were there a few key people in your life that helped steer you or guide you? Can you share some story that way?
I can. So I grew up in Northern Philadelphia, and my father was a Mennonite pastor, and my mother was a social worker. They decided to live in, we were middle class, but they decided to live in a lower income community for the purpose of impacting that community in a positive way. Both of my parents were social justice people. My father was one of the first African-American pastors in the Mennonite church, and was active in ensuring that the Mennonites functioned in a way that was cognizant of differences and aware of the differences and valued those differences. And my mother was also active in the Mennonite church, organizing a peace conference and organizing women in ministry with a social justice mindset. So I was raised that way. My parents would, if there was a family in need, they would invite them to our home and they would begin living with us. My mom would cook dinner every week in preparation, not knowing who would have dinner with us after Sunday service. So I grew up that way, where the door was open and people came all the time. We also had students that would reside with us annually as well. So that's how I grew up. So knowing that that it's important for me to serve and to take the gifts and talents that I have and do what I can to impact others.
One of the phrases that I associate with you is, I'm God's favorite, and so are you.
Yes.
Will you talk about where that came from and how that lives in you now?
I feel like, I am a person who has a close relationship with God, who guides and directs my life. And what that means for me, though, is that I am, my choices are influenced by Spirit. So I'm not making my choices. So what that also means is that I'm put in some places sometimes where there are difficult people. And I would have a tendency to like go somewhere else because this isn't where I want to be. It's uncomfortable, right? But Spirit has shown me, and I feel like my first encounter with Spirit was when I was about 10, when I felt isolated and alone and not really loved and cared for. So I felt like God spoke to me directly when I was about 10, just knowing that God loved me as an individual. And so having grown up with that idea and mindset, I do actually believe that that I am God's favorite. But I also recognize that other people are God's favorite too. And it comes from that, knowing that that I am. I really actually believe that. I believe that when I see a full moon, that it is personal to me, that that's something that God has made sure that I see it because he knows how much I appreciate it. So that's kind of where that came from. Like, I believe that I'm God's favorite, but I also believe that God has made us individually and was very, very purposeful in making each of us and took that same care for everyone. And so that's where it comes from.
As your relationship with Spirit, or how has your relationship with Spirit changed over the years? Has it changed over the years? And if so, how?
Oh, it has changed over the years. So in the beginning, well, as a child, it was more like God's out here. And I would sometimes talk to God, And then when I was a teenager, I went on a mission trip and they taught us to have daily intimate relationship with God, gave us like a practice of how to do it. We set time aside, you have a pen and a paper, you have your Bible, and they taught us to do that. And I did that regularly, probably for a couple years, and then kind of fell off. After I graduated from college and started living life, or and even during college. And then over the years, I worked at places that were more challenging. I worked in a prison for almost 5 years, and that in that time, I came back to spirit, I would say, because I had stopped really doing anything. Stopped praying, really. Stopped going to church. I was just kind of doing my own thing. But in that environment, I was challenged because you see every ill of the world. And not really having answers for it, being uncomfortable in it and being horrified by it and not having any answers for it. So I returned to spirit for solace, for comfort, for recognition that this is not within my power to change, nor is it my job to change, and that that's spirit's job. And recognizing that if I'm guided by spirit, then I'm more powerful to do the things that God has assigned to me. And so after that, then I continued to live my life, my job, I was going to church regularly, volunteering. But over the course of my life, I became more interested in real change, like real dynamic relationship with spirit, and didn't really know how that would happen. And I'd ran into a situation where I lost my job, where I was losing my job. And I asked spirit, I said, I know that you know this better than I, and you have an answer for this problem. And so I know you're going to find something for me. And it was like weeks away from the last day. And so I taught, so spirit, so when I got back from lunch after making that prayer, so a friend of mine called me, told me about this job that was like on a Monday. I went for the job interview on like, I want to say a Wednesday. They offered me the job that day. And I was in a law firm with individuals where there were no people of color. The only female on staff was a person who wasn't actually on staff. She wasn't a part of the law firm. So it was a challenging environment for me. And I asked Spirit to send me someone who was like me, living their life directed by God. And I met a friend in the parking lot who remains a friend, close friend of mine right now. And she kind of she showed me like a dynamic relationship with spirit, where she would talk out loud to spirit and tell me what spirit was telling her. I was like, I want that too. And we began to talk about how did she develop that. And I became more intent on making my relationship with spirit stronger. And so that my time spent with spirit was stronger, my intention, and my plan was stronger. And I'll say too that part of the reason I made that prayer is because I was desperate for support.
If you were guiding, thank you for that. You know some of this, I think, but I have a I don't know what to call it, an ongoing belly yearning for relationship with spirit. And I struggle with some of the language. Sometimes it's God, sometimes it's spirit, sometimes it's other frustrations. But I still have like this belly yearning for things unseen. So what you're sharing and what I've known in you previously also, it touches some of that part. I'm just appreciative that way. If you were to suggest in the spirit in the realm of strengthening relationship with spirit, some of the small yet important starting things, what would you name?
I would say get a pen.
What?
I said get a pen.
Ah, there we go.
Get a pen.
Yeah.
And a paper.
Yeah.
And begin to sit with spirit.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Yeah.
And ask spirit to speak to you.
Yeah.
And write whatever comes to mind.
Yeah.
That's how I would say it. I'd also say that you don't necessarily, for me, I use a pen to concentrate because otherwise my mind wanders.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also, depending on how you're wired, it could be a walk in nature.
Yeah.
And you ask spirit to show you things or speak to you. I think the ask to spirit to speak to you is all that's necessary for it to happen. I've had a couple of people in my life who said what you've said, who said, how does that happen? How do you do that? I said, well, I believe that spirit wants to speak with you.
Yeah.
But we don't generally take time to do that. I'll tell you, for years, my prayers only, all my prayers were just me talking. It was just me just saying what I needed and didn't spend any time listening.
Mm-hmm.
But my life changed when I began to listen.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Okay, LaTanya. One of the memories that I have with you in association with some work that we're doing, and Juanita was part of that, and we were talking about some issues of race and how people were interrelating or not interrelating also. And you offered a line that stuck with me. It's not my first day being a Black woman. Will you expand a little on that context and how that feels to you now?
Okay. Sometimes people say in an environment where we're talking about race, they'll say, well, I don't know. They might say to you, I don't know why they're behaving this way or what we should do about these particular challenges, because it just doesn't make sense, right? Mm-hmm. We're in an environment perhaps where people have education about difference and the value of difference and how race impacts our relationships and how race has impacted our history. And so people have all of this knowledge, but that doesn't change the way necessarily that they relate to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say something like, this isn't my first day as a Black woman, it's my experience. So I have always been in situations where there are people who are different from myself. I grew up in a Mennonite denomination, which is predominantly white.
Yeah.
So I was always in an environment where there were different, where it wasn't just African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have an understanding of what that means when I'm in a space with people who are different from me.
Yeah.
But I also have a respect for the process of getting to know one another, that if people are not used to that, they say things that they don't mean. And even if they are used to it, they might love you and still come from a place where they reveal their bias.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you. Another time, another conversation somewhere. I think, again, we were talking, or some of us were talking about race and equity and steps.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you got to fight. Will you talk about that one a little bit?
Yes. I'll say it in this way, too, that my parents, I was raised by pacifists.
Mm-hmm. Ah, interesting.
So my father was a conscientious objector in the Vietnam War. He volunteered and served at a hospital instead of going to war. And is very, and if you were to have a discussion with him today, he would still talk about how anti-war he is. So I was raised in that environment. But I recognize that a fight is sometimes necessary, that some of us are And that doesn't necessarily mean, fist fighting, right? But it does mean that you have to counter those forces that are against you, and you can't lay back and let things happen. If you are passive in every way, that the other forces against you aren't passive. So you do have to resist. You do have to stand up. You do have to fight. We are swimming upstream. System wants to remain the way it is. It doesn't want to change. And it requires you to be aggressive, to make a change.
Aggressive, clear, courageous, those kinds of
Bold.
things, and bold. Ah, nice.
Bold and brave, right? You can't. Sometimes we are sitting in rooms and people are saying things or doing things that we know aren't right? And maybe because we don't want to be embarrassed or we don't want to cause a ruckus, we don't say anything. But when we know something isn't right and we're sitting in a room, we need to say something. It's important. So often we're in rooms where we shouldn't be silent, and we are. To take a stand and say something. In fact, I believe that you're in the room for that purpose.
How are we doing, Latanya? Where else would you like to go today? You and I talking in a human-to-human context.
I'd like to. I have a question for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
When you go
Okay.
into these spaces,
Yeah.
and not just with Quanita, but other spaces too, where you find that you are in a space with people of different races or different, just different from you,
Yeah.
how do you work to speak up?
Yeah.
You work at that.
Wait, say the question again. How do I work to speak up with some difference or
Yes,
invite the
yes.
group to speak up?
And both. Well,
Okay.
you yourself,
Yeah.
you are, well, you yourself speak
Yeah.
up, and you encourage others to speak up because you do coaching, right? And you're also, you help with organizations, and you also
Yeah.
help individuals, and you show up in these spaces yourself.
Yeah. Okay, I'll play it a little bit and just scribble a little note so I can remember it. One, I think, is it matters to be able to go into spaces not alone. And so you're referencing Quinita, and Quinita and I, over many years, got to do a lot of important work together. And I think really support each other. And in some of the places, particularly where it's a lot of people of color, I know that I gained footing in those rooms because of Quinita, a Black woman. So there's something about that sort of core foundation grounding, I think, that really matters. I think sometimes I cross my fingers in terms of what I'm speaking up with. I'm a person that I think I do my best, Latanya, when I'm paying attention to my belly, to a sense of intuition. I think that often feels like spirit to me, and something in that feeling feels important. So I'm trying to listen to something that is subtle and clear, and sometimes it's cutting through noise to be able to hear that. Those are things that I relate to. I think sometimes I cross my fingers. I hope what I'm saying out loud is useful and helpful, or contributes to something useful in the room. I tend to orient also in the facilitation and groups and things that I get to do quite strongly to an overarching purpose. Let's create more connection, not less. Let's create more learning, not less. And sometimes that follows through to experimenting, more experimenting, not less. But all of that is so relational. So I know that I tend to ask questions that I hope go a little further into welcoming people to show up with their similarity and their difference. around things that they care about. I rely on kinds of questions like, what do you most care about here? This is all about creating some, you know, dialogue such that people can be in a different kind of connection around less about things that are, at least initially, less mm-hmm. about things that are right or wrong, and more mm-hmm. about what are things that you really care about as the human being that you are. Something happens, I think, when people are willing to engage that way, mm-hmm. and it creates a different kind of field for how we can be together in some pretty tough things, or some pretty awkward or pretty unfamiliar things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's somewhat where I go with that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you rely on?
What do I rely on?
Yeah.
I rely on spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I also rely on being a really good listener.
Mm.
And I'd say I listen first,
mm-hmm.
Especially in environments with people I don't know.
Yeah.
I listen first. I listen first. And I'm careful with my words.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I rely on.
Beautiful.
And I remember
mm.
that they're God's favorite.
There you are.
Because it really, I when I really like put that in and mm-hmm. heard that, like that helps me with all of my relationships, you know, because people can be difficult.
Yeah.
They can be really difficult and very hard, but to recognize that spirit mm-hmm. wants the absolute best for them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like spirit wants the best for me. Mm-hmm. So I can't be mean and nasty to them
mm-hmm.
without thinking about that. You know? Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I appreciate that in you, LaTanya. I lately have been putting even a little more attention into trying to feel or sometimes name what is the most simple story going on here. And often for me, that simple story comes back to some very basic human kinds of things. We're trying to be good humans together. We're trying to be kind. We're trying to be conscious, you know. What's some of the most simple story for you as a human being trying to do good things in the world that in which you live?
I'd say a simple story is it's important for me to be all of me in every space that I am, because mm. no one else can do that. Mm. And to recognize that that is my superpower.
To be all of you.
To be all of me. Like I, yeah. Sometimes you go to the space, at least when I was younger, especially, mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out what I needed to be in particular spaces. And how I needed to relate, because maybe they'll be uncomfortable if I said this, or maybe if I talk too much, they'll think this of me, or when they say this, they right. want this reaction. So I was more, as a younger, I was more reactive, right?
Yeah.
So now I show up mm. as me, and that's what I need to do.
Can you offer an example of that that is shareable?
Let me think. So what it means for me is when I go, for example, this is an example. So we have, I volunteered to host a meeting of people, of women at my church. I don't know any of them. So they show up, and it's important for me to be welcoming, to listen a lot, not talk a lot, because I can go on and on, and on. But to make sure that everyone there is feeling comfortable and feeling welcomed, it's my job to show them that spirit loves them as they are. It's my job to show them that with my mouth, with my words, with my gestures, that that God is real and spirit is real. So and so I approach my interactions with people that way. Whether I speak about spirit or not, that's my intention. And that's my role.
Right.
Yeah.
I think this might be a similar answer to, or a similar reflection that you've already offered. How is it that you gained your confidence and your clarity to show up that way? Show up, all of you.
So when I was 14, Spirit called me to be a lawyer. Really clear.
Did you say warrior? Sorry.
Lawyer.
Lawyer. Okay. Well, warrior, lawyer too.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was real clear.
Yeah.
But I was very shy. Very shy. And so, but because I recognized spirit, and I recognized it wasn't just going to be me, that spirit was going to be with me and was going to help me. That if I did what I needed to do by virtue of what spirit told me to do, then that would be successful. And I didn't question it. Even though I didn't know any lawyers, I didn't even know how long it took to become a lawyer. I just knew that this is what.
You're spirit, 14 at the time.
14. I was 14. Yeah. So I didn't know. I didn't know the process. I just heard it real clear. And so what happened to help me with my confidence is the experiences that I had. So I worked in a prison. You can't be a male. It was a male maximum security prison in Northeastern Ohio. That was my first job out of law school. You cannot be shy in that environment. My job was to defend alleged parole violators, and I traveled to jails. So it wasn't a lot of preparation. So I'm meeting strangers all the time. I'm asking them questions all the time. And it helped me get confident in who I am to be in that kind of environment that was kind, that was, it was hostile to who I am. Or who I was, still to know who I was. And so I had to get stronger in that space. And by stronger, I don't mean emotionally. I had to get stronger emotionally. And to recognize that that what I brought was different from what other people brought.
Stronger, clearer. Kind of thing. Right. Like, I just imagine that takes a certain amount of clarity in your belly to say, this is who I am and this is why I'm here, and to feel it, right?
Right. And I got that from spirit telling me at 14. Like, the clarity was, and you're working in prison. It wasn't just be a lawyer, it was in prison. So I was in the prison having been assigned by God and knowing that.
Yeah.
And that gives you a confidence, like, okay. This is what God called me to do. This is my assignment. And so from that moment to this, I have taken assignments that God has given me. And so that gives me confidence, because I'm not picking these things.
Right. Yeah, that's good. Okay. One more tiny shift.
Okay.
When you think, I mean, here you are, you're involved in economic and racial justice work and a pile of other things that go with that. When you think justice work, when you think equity, when you think inclusion, when you think diversity, is there something that has become clear to you that rests underneath all of that?
It's the fact that we are God's favorite. And that to the extent that everyone doesn't get an opportunity to do what they need to do, we're all missing out. Like, it's not like I might not know a kid in Utah who is living in a house who doesn't have enough and goes to a school that doesn't have enough. I might not know that kid. But the fact that that kid can't get at a table where that kid can influence what's happening in their community, I'm missing out. And we all have a, there's a harm that we all lose when that happens. So I'd say that's what undergirds that work, is that justice means that there isn't a barrier that's set up in advance before you even leave the hospital after exiting your mother's womb. Yeah. That there isn't something that stops you from achieving all you can.
Systemically entrained, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, recognizing that we are all at work, they talk a lot sometimes about directly impacted people.
Yeah.
I don't like that term because I think we're all impacted. We're all impacted. And to the extent when you say directly impacted, there's a little implication of impacts that the rest of us have.
Right.
But I prefer lived experience.
Yeah.
That when you want people with lived experience, that's a difference, because we are all directly impacted to the extent that people are not living just lives, right? They're not able to access the things that they really need, you know, that we're all harmed by that.
Can you share a bit of what you think is coming next as a wave or phase or whatever for LaTanya being LaTanya?
Oh, okay. Let's see. LaTanya, for me, what's next is a more action. More action, more relationships. I'm new to this community, so I'm developing a community here. I lived in Toledo for 20 years. So part of what's next is my new community, right? My new friends, my new support, and also I think new levels of influence too.
Clap, clap. Miss LaTanya, is there anything else that you would like to share in this context before we pause the recording, and then we'll go offline and have a little proper goodbye?
Just that if you and anyone else has a desire to meet spirit, spirit has a desire to meet you. That desire comes from spirit.
Thank you. Thank you for joining. If people want to reach out to you or connect to you, is there a preferred way that you have that they do that?
My email address is LaTanyaWilson@povertylaw.org. LaTanyaWilson@povertylaw.org.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so now it's me back after the proper goodbye offline with LaTanya. She is a potent human being to me. I'm so glad to know her through a few contexts, and that continues. I feel the invitation with LaTanya that feels like it's probably a lot of the things that she was speaking to in our recorded conversation. She has, to me, some kind of profound and compelling relationship with spirit. And that translates into a profound and compelling invitation, I think, to be good human beings. And in, all of the connection and love that's possible, and all of the sort of scrambliness or messiness that can show up also. So I just have a lot of appreciation for LaTanya in her professional ways, in her friendship ways, in her spiritual ways, and in her deeply communal ways. Thanks for a good listen today. I hope you're moved by the words that have been shared and the stories that have been shared. For more information or more connection, I welcome you onto my website, tennisonwolf.com. I post a daily blog there, or a Monday through Thursday blog, that is often reflection as a as an artist, as a facilitator, as a reasonably thoughtful human being in the world. So there's lots of things to connect into there. Thanks for listening today.